This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
So, Godless Ones, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, welcoming you to Free Thought Radio, the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This is the weekend of February 4th and 5th, 2012. Free Thought Radio broadcasts and streams right here in Madison, Wisconsin. And hello to all you podcast listeners and those of you who are listening to broadcast in several other cities. FFRF is an active state church watchdog. We represent more than 17,500 freethinkers around the country. And freethinkers include atheists, agnostics, other skeptics, other types of non-believers who are members of our group. And we hope today you will join us. You can join us at ffrf.org.
You Don't Bring Me Flowers Anymore, which we started the show with, Barbara Streisand, is an allusion to the brouhaha over floral shops in Cranston, Rhode Island, refusing to deliver our congratulatory flowers to 16-year-old victorious state church litigant Jessica Alquist. And you may have heard the interview we did with her last week about the firestorm over her challenge of a religious banner at her school.
And later today, we'll talk with that remarkable florist, Sean Condon. He had to travel all the way from Connecticut to ensure that Jessica got FFRF's flowers. That was a couple of weeks ago. Sean has been trying to educate not just about simple civility, but about the fact that, yes, the Civil Rights Act does apply to atheists, and places of public accommodation must provide services to freethinkers, atheists and agnostics, even if those freethinkers take state church lawsuits.
Especially if those freethinkers take state church lawsuits, in my opinion. So, you know, we have we filed a complaint with the Rhode Island Human Rights Commission over the civil rights violation in Rhode Island. And speaking of lawsuits, FFRF has filed a new federal lawsuit. This, I can't say hot off the press, I guess, this week. On Thursday.
Hot off the complaint? Or?
We now have 8 current active lawsuits. We've taken well over 50, and most of our current lawsuits are in federal court. We filed a lawsuit in Missoula, Montana on Thursday, suing the U.S. Forest Service. And we're sorry it came to that, but they left us with no choice when this past week it formally announced it is renewing a special permit lease, an unconstitutional lease, to the Knights of Columbus in Montana, so their shrine to Jesus can stay on federal land in a prominent spot overlooking Big Mountain in Flathead National Forest near Kalispell, Montana.
Well, they overturned their earlier decision not to renew the lease. Here is one Montana television story.
On Montana's news station.
The statue of Jesus Christ at Whitefish Mountain Resort will not be going anywhere. The U.S. Forest Service made that decision today.
But the Wisconsin group responsible for bringing that statue to the forefront says it will file suit in federal court.
Big Mountain, the topic of conversation all over the country, as the U.S. Forest Service today announcing that they would renew their permit for 10 years for the statue of Jesus on Big Mountain.
Flathead National Forest Supervisor Chip Weber made the announcement Tuesday to reauthorize a special use permit for the Knights of Columbus to display the statue of Jesus. Spokesperson for the Flathead National Forest, Wade Muehlhoff.
Chip Weber mentioned in his decision, we recognize that this has been a longstanding part of the community since 1955. It has some very important social and cultural importance to the community, and so the decision was based on that.
One of the loudest voices in opposition to the removal of the statue was Congressman Denny Rehberg. He says he's happy about Tuesday's decision.
It is a piece of good news. I really appreciate the Forest Service making the right decision. And we look forward to 10 years of respite, but we'll be watching.
And Rehberg has good reason to be skeptical this is the end. We spoke with co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, Annie Laurie Gaylor, in Wisconsin.
It's not so much that we have feelings as that we have action. We have a complaint, a legal complaint, ready to file in Missoula federal court. We actually were hoping to file it earlier today, regardless of what this decision was. We expected it to be the wrong way.
In Kalispell, I'm Dax Van Fossen for Montana's News Station.
And them people trying to take it down, I don't think it's any of their damn business.
So we'll have more details on our newest federal lawsuit over the Jesus Shrine in Montana next week.
In more news, FFRF protested, as we always do, the president's participation in the so-called National Prayer Breakfast on Thursday. That prayer breakfast serves up an awful, unlawful mixture of church and state. The National Day of Prayer Breakfast lends the unmistakable appearance that the White House itself co-sponsors the event, that it's working hand in glove with the ultra-right-wing Christian group called the Fellowship Foundation, also known as the Family. This group apparently originated the breakfast to mix religion and state in the early 1950s. We also contacted four federal agencies over what appears to be an egregious violation of federal law by the publicizers of the National Prayer Breakfast, who are appropriating the presidential, congressional, and great seals of the United States to promote their private breakfast. The misuse gives the false impression that the infamous National Prayer Breakfast is sponsored and approved by multiple layers of our federal government.
So we sent separate letters to Attorney General Eric Holder, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, Secretary of the Senate Nancy Erickson, Clerk of the U.S. House Karen Lehman, Haas. And in various letters, our senior staff attorney, Rebecca Markert, noted that these seals give the false and misleading appearance that the National Prayer Breakfast sponsors have close ties to the U.S. government. And of course, actually they do, because they show up. Congress just almost en masse shows up. The president shows up, but it is privately sponsored. And we also noted in those letters that this private prayer breakfast is a little bit expensive. Attendants pay $650 per person.
There's no such thing as a free breakfast.
Right, and some of them pay more. And then we looked at the 2010-990 form for this hosting organization, the Fellowship Foundation, which is very mysterious, doesn't have its own website. And that form revealed that in 2009, the last year for which we would have these online records, they raked in over $1 million for the prayer breakfast. Now, in the good news department, it does pay to complain. Nothing fails like a prayer card.
It pays to complain no matter how long it takes. At long last, Alaska Airlines this February has just ceased the much protested by us practice of distributing prayer cards to its airline customers with their meals.
So may I say hallelujah? And it took 30 years, but Alaska Airlines finally listened. And Dan, you were looking up some of that. The letters that we had published over the years.
Way back in the 80s, yeah. We
many action alerts. Yeah. And our members, very literate.
Remember what it was like to do action alerts before email?
Right. Well, the world was a little slower paced. But we did, for 30 years, help educate Alaska Airlines about the fact that many of its paying customers are not religious or prefer other religious teachings and were greatly offended at being forced to see these Christian prayer cards when they were paying exorbitant fees to travel on this airline. Talk about being a captive audience. You're stuck in your seat when they hand these to you. So obviously, if travelers want to pray, they can do so without the behest of the commercial airline. And it never did inspire confidence that airline officials would feel the need to pray during flights, did it, Dan?
Well, maybe they finally trained their pilots enough that they don't have to pray anymore. That's reassuring. So I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And Free Thought Radio will be right back. We're going to talk about the religious war against women. Then we'll interview a Free Thought hero, the florist who delivered flowers to Jessica Ahlquist.
And them people trying to take it down, I don't think it's any of their damn business.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
No gods, no masters, no popes, no pastors. Think for yourself. No more dictators. Resist those woman haters and decide for yourself.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we're the co-directors of the Freedom from Religion Foundation, and this is sort of part two of last week. We played that same music by Dan, the words of Margaret Sanger, to commemorate the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, and we want to continue talking about the status of women in religion.
The treatment of Jessica Ahlquist, that 16-year-old Rhode Island teenager who's being targeted by her state representative, by her classmates, by her mayor. Sometimes it seems like the entire state of Rhode Island is going after her for taking and winning a federal court decision against a prayer banner in her public high school. And that has called our attention to religion's inhumanity to women. Jessica has been called a witch by classmates. She's been subjected to threats, to online sexual comments, references to rape, and in her case, the fomenters are largely the hidebound Roman Catholics in that mainly Catholic-dominated state. We wonder how much the sermons on Sundays in Catholic churches in Rhode Island have to do with this level of bigotry and revilement.
And why should a smart, polite, well-spoken, atheist 16-year-old who is working to defend the Constitution have to go to school with a police escort? Excuse me, it almost harkens back to the treatment of black students during desegregation in the 1950s.
And of course, this religious discrimination comes right out of the pages of holy books like the Bible. Jessica's plight calls to our attention the global religious war against women.
And before we talk about things going on in Afghanistan, let's talk also still about things in our country. We are seeing a backlash by the Catholic institutions and Catholic hierarchy fighting back against President Obama's long-awaited and much admirable decision announced last month to require that institutions, almost all institutions, including religious, there are some exceptions, do have to provide insurance coverage for birth control when they have health insurance. And there's a huge, huge battle against this right now to basically deny women birth control.
Globally, then, in just the last week or so, look at these developments. Here's a story. Afghan atrocities target women. Two recent crimes by Afghans reveal the harm of Islamist teachings against women. An Afghan immigrant was convicted of four counts of first-degree murder for horrific so-called honor killings on January 29th in Ottawa, Canada. Mohammed Shafiaf, who's 58, one of his wives, and a son were convicted after a three-month trial of murdering Shafia's three teenage daughters and his second wife. Police wiretaps recorded Shafia using graphic language to express his view that his daughters had disgraced the family by dating and by wearing so-called revealing clothing. He said, "They violated us immensely. There can be no betrayal, no treachery, no violation more than this." One of his daughters had been frightened enough to beg the police to help them escape and put them in foster care. A Parks Canada employee spotted a submerged car in a canal in June of 2009 containing the bodies of Shafia's daughters, Zainab, who was 19, Sahar, 17, Giti, 13, and Ms. Amir Muhammad, age 53. Amir had entered Canada claiming to be Shafia's cousin but was in fact his other wife. Amir's diary revealed that she could not have children and described being beaten by Shafia and his son. Shafia claimed the girls had gone on a late-night joyride that night, but evidence indicated that the four were already dead when the car went into the canal. Justice Robert Meringer of Ontario Superior Court said, "It's difficult to conceive of a more despicable, more heinous, more honorless crime. The apparent reason behind these cold-blooded, shameful murders was that the four completely innocent victims offended your completely twisted concept of honor, a notion of honor that is founded upon the domination and control of women."
And I would point out that the Quran and the Bible are founded upon the domination and control of women. This was a Muslim believer. In late January, it was also reported that a man and his mother in the northern Afghan province of Kunduz strangled a young Afghan wife for giving birth to a daughter. The woman, known only as Storay 22, was found with a rope around her neck on January 25th. She had married at 18 and already had two girls, ages 3 and 2. She gave birth 3 months ago to another daughter. There had been arguments about this documented.
So strike three.
Her husband, Sher Mohammed, who has ties with a Muslim militia group, has fled. The mother-in-law has been arrested and is accused of putting a rope in the window of her daughter-in-law's room to give the impression that she had killed herself, but there were signs of torture. Other recent violence against Afghan women includes an attack in December, a heinous attack where four gunmen broke into a house and threw acid on three school-aged girls and their mother. It was revenge after one of the attackers' offer of marriage was refused by the girl's father. Girls, this is a quote from Nadira Gaya, who's head of the Directorate of Women's Affairs in Kunduz. Glad to know there is one in Afghanistan. She told the New York Times, girls are looked down upon in Afghanistan. I have heard of many cases where the wife is threatened with violence and beaten up, but I have never heard of a woman being killed for having a girl. So this is a world where a woman can be murdered for giving birth to a daughter. Religion has a lot to answer for. And
I've debated a number of Muslim scholars. 7 times now I've done debates with them, and in one of them I pointed out that it appears to me that the whole point of Islam and the whole point of the Quran and the Hadith and the teachings of Muhammad, the basic underlying point is the control of access to females. It's a biological thing that they're trying to use religion. And how young was Muhammad's youngest wife? She was 11, I think, when they were married.
Yeah, and so or 9, I think.
When they were married, and I think 11 or 12 when they consummated it. But and then
horrible to contemplate.
And the Quran talks about to be a pure man, to be a good Muslim, you have to be faithful in prayer and limit your sexual intercourse to your wives and your slaves, meaning keep your hands off another man's property.
And that's straight out of, I mean, a lot of the Old Testament is shared in common by the Jewish, Christian, and Muslim faith. I mean, we have wise King Solomon had, 100 wives and 700 concubines?
Or 300.
300
yeah,
wives and 700. He had 1,000 women. He owned 1,000 women.
So that's every 3 years, huh?
Yeah, so it's not just the Muslim religion, but, you know, this is shared in common. And this is one of the reasons why the Freedom From Religion Foundation last week also issued a press release and wrote letters about the iniquitous action of the one house of the Pennsylvania legislature, which calls 2012 to be the year of the Bible. And this is one of the many biblical teachings that women are property, rapable, viable, sellable. This is not something that a secular legislature should have the right to do. And so we're fighting that in the Pennsylvania legislature, but we do not want religious rules in our secular civil laws. Even in a secular country like Canada, look what happens when you have religious fanaticism.
Maybe next week we can play a little bit of my radio interview with the Pennsylvania sponsor of that bill, Sakad, I think was his name. I can try to get a recording of that, where he's defending the Bible as the basis of American government.
And of course, FFRF did sue back in 83. It was Gaylor versus Reagan when 1983 was declared to be the entire year of the Bible. That was a bad one, but we keep educating.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio. We're going to move on to a somewhat cheerier topic now after the break. We're going to get acquainted with the fascinating Connecticut florist. Listen to this music in the background. This florist,
where have all the flowers gone?
This florist who was willing to deliver the Freedom From Religion Foundation's flowers to the Rhode Island teenager Jessica Alquist, whom we talked with last week. It's coming up right after the break.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021.
Long time passing, where have all the flowers gone? Long time ago.
I'm Dan Barker, and where have all the flowers gone? That was a protest song, and I guess it's appropriate to play a protest song talking about this next topic. And I'm here with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we have on the phone with us from Connecticut the now famous, or maybe infamous, florist from Connecticut who was brave enough to do what a lot of other florists would not do in Rhode Island, deliver our flowers to Jessica Aquas, whom we spoke with last week. As you remember, Jessica is the teenager, 16-year-old, who successfully sued her school over the unconstitutional placement of a prayer on the walls of the school. So we have Sean Condon from, what's the town, Hartford?
No, Putnam.
Oh, Putnam. Putnam, Connecticut, just across the border. Welcome to Free Thought Radio, Sean.
Well, thanks for having me.
Sean, I want to thank you first, because we really haven't spoken before, for delivering our flowers.
You're welcome. It was less of a big deal than it seems to have become since.
Well, it started to get to be a big deal for us because, you know, we went through four florists in Rhode Island who would not deliver the flowers. And I was getting very frustrated when I think it was your cousin sent us an email and said, I know a great florist in Putnam, Connecticut, Sean Condon, who has a shop called Glimpse of Gaia. And we went to your website and fell in love with it. It's beautiful. Your shop is beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
And you were so professional, and immediately. Well, I think you spent most of your day on this enterprise, didn't you?
Yeah, and quite a bit of time since, in fact.
Okay, and I know what Gaia means, but maybe some of our listeners don't.
Gaia is the in Greek mythology, is a sort of Mother Nature character. She's the mother of the Titans and all of the major gods.
And that's where we get the word geology, isn't it?
Exactly.
The same Greek word for earth. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, we had ordered a dozen roses, and I know that you took our order, and we had congratulations and hang in there, Jessica. But you also, I believe, delivered your own bouquet.
No.
Oh, no.
I don't know where this came from, and I keep trying to dispel this rumor. Not that I have anything against the idea, but we got another order thereafter from someone who lives in the Edgewood section of Cranston.
Well, we started to... Oh, really? I don't know if we know who that person is. And then I know that we started to get all these people emailing and phoning, how can we send flowers to Jessica? So I know that you have delivered... she told me when we talked to her last week, she had about a dozen flowers. How many has your shop delivered?
I think they're pretty much all from us. And, it was about a dozen to her, as well as, I want to say, 8 or 10 that went to local charities in her name. And I hope I'm not letting the cat out of the bag, but she's got more coming this weekend.
Huh? Good. Yeah. Well, I'm glad. And actually, our office got flowers, which you would have... Somebody contacted you to send flowers to, I think it was called the Lovely Ladies at FFRF?
Yes. Hmm.
And you handled that through one of the Madison florists. So thank you.
You're welcome.
So and thank you. I must say thank you to Ben, who did not sign his name. We don't know who that was, but it was very kind, and we love flowers at our office.
How far is the trip?
Cranston is about an hour from where we are.
And I understand you had to go back. Of course, Jessica was in school or out. You were delivering flowers to Providence, too?
Yes, I had some deliveries in Providence, which is the next town over from Cranston. And so it wasn't that far out of the way, so it didn't require charging a fortune, which ordinarily it would.
So there's no law against crossing state borders to deliver flowers to a minor, is there?
Not that I know of.
That was very generous of you to do that.
Now, in addition to just being a normal person and kind and all that, you really know your law. And what I was so impressed was that at your website, you put up a statement. I think these are your responses to some of the... You got some negative flack. I understand mostly you got positive. Maybe that's changed.
No, it's still... we're still getting positive emails every day. I responded to all the email that I got, and we did receive two that were negative. So I responded to them, and I kind of wrote this long explanation of why it is we have a separation of church and state and why you have private space for that. And
I wonder if you could we could go into it, because actually, you know, we have a civil rights complaint in Rhode Island against two of the florists who made statements that seemed to show they were violating the Civil Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was so impressed with your grasp of it, and I wonder if you can put into your own words what you told these critics.
Well, what I explained to them is, first of all, that businesses do have the ability to refuse to service, but not for any reason. There has to be something going on. If you're trying to buy something for illegal use, if you are belligerent in their store, et cetera, absolutely they can reserve the right to refuse to help you. But they can't do that if, you know, you're just the wrong color or you think things the wrong a way that they don't like. That's just not allowed. In addition to being against the law, it's wrong. So
this is the Civil Rights Act
yes.
of 1964. It's been around a long time.
Should I read it?
Yeah.
Should I read Title 2, Section 201 says this: all persons shall be entitled to the full and equal enjoyment of the goods, services, facilities, and privileges, advantages, and accommodations of any place of public accommodation as defined in this section, without discrimination or segregation on the ground of race, color, religion, or national origin.
And of course, it's been amended to, I think, include sex and gender, but Rhode Island has one of the oldest state anti-discrimination law enforcement agencies in the country. It was actually established in 1949, and it you know, prevents a policy of discrimination against individuals. And so, you know, we are talking about race, color, sex, pregnancy, disability, ancestral origin, religion, sexual orientation, gender identity, expression, and age. All of these things, you can't refuse to provide services for someone for these protected reasons. And Sean, you made a very eloquent argument, you know, that in these emails to your critics, because you asked them to imagine another situation instead of flower delivery being denied. What if it was something more important?
Exactly. You know, we tend to make this big, we've made this big deal about the flowers, but if it were something like food or medical care, or if you were, you know, stuck on a dark highway somewhere late at night and about to run out of gas and walked into the business to try to purchase this and were denied simply because they don't like the way you think. And further, you know, you have to remember that that protection goes to people who think differently from you, but it's also there to protect you.
And you also pointed out that, you know, you would never consider denying your services, not doing business with someone, because, for example, they were Roman Catholic.
Exactly, yes.
Imagine how they would feel.
it would probably be a bigger news story, you know, this is just central to the idea that this country is founded on, equality for everyone. And including against the tyranny of the majority.
And, you know, I mean, my gosh, the Civil Rights Act, this is very, very basic law. This is very basic to the way our society operates today. And it is kind of scary to think that so many people don't even get it. I mean, it's like something out of the South in the 1950s.
It is. It's pretty shocking. But even more than that, a lot of people don't seem to understand the separation of church and state. And, you know, sort of imply that it's not really there. And, I mean, it's pretty foundational to our country. I mean, we're talking about the First Amendment and Jefferson and all of the things that he said about there being a very clear line between. He came up with the phrase.
Yeah. And our complaint to the Human Rights Commission in Rhode Island technically doesn't involve Jessica. We are the ones
who
have been harmed.
Actually, it does involve Jessica, because I don't think the florist knew who we were. They knew who she was.
But I mean, she's not a party or to the complaint.
We're taking,
we are the ones who have been
denied the service.
So,
but it was on discriminatory grounds because of Jessica.
Well, and one of them wrote on the form, "I will not deliver to that person," what they wrote.
Now, Sean, did you get a chance to meet Jessica?
Oddly enough, no. I've spoken to her twice on the phone, and I've met much of her family, but she's been so busy running around as a result of this whole thing and speaking and whatnot that she hasn't actually been there when I've delivered anything.
Well, I know that she said, told us on last week's show, she was thrilled. She had, her house was full of beautiful fragrance and beautiful flowers, so she's appreciated it. Who would think that doing such a simple thing as sending flowers would turn into this, you know, practically federal case?
Well, it got a front page story in the New York Times. Did you see that story on January 27th?
I did, yes. Every little bit of information that comes out, someone forwards to me. So my aunt actually sent a copy of that one to me.
And I was, the reporter was very nice, and she did talk a lot about the floral, the discrimination by the florist got into it, the Freedom From Religion Foundation's plight, trying to deter the flowers, got some press in the New York Times. Now, we just kind of lucked out with you. I mean, I guess you were referred by a nice freethinker, but we had no idea when we were commissioning you to deliver our flowers that you were such a supporter and so well-read on things like separation of church and state. What are your views on religion?
Well, I happen to be an atheist, but as I've said to many people who've asked, that has nothing to do with delivering flowers. I would deliver flowers to the Ground Zero Mosque if I were asked to. You know, you simply don't discriminate. Even if you dislike what the other person thinks or don't believe what they think is true, that doesn't make any difference. You don't discriminate. But I happen to be an atheist, personally.
But being an atheist, you're part of a minority that appreciates the First Amendment and the protections against the tyranny of the majority. You're probably more sensitive to it than perhaps other florists.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
Now, what's your background?
Like my religious background?
Yeah.
Well, my mother was Episcopal, but her family didn't really take religion too seriously. My father's Catholic. My uncle is actually a Catholic priest.
Really?
And I attended a conservative Catholic college in Pennsylvania.
So somehow you took that and you went a whole different direction than the florists in Cranston, Rhode Island.
Well, I'd actually like to give a little credit, you know, where it's due. I got a pretty good education at that little Catholic college, and that was where I solidified my views as an atheist. And I also got a full ride there, so I'm not going to complain too much about it.
Now, are you alone in your, you know, family in being an atheist?
No, pretty much everyone in my family is an atheist.
They all left the Catholic Church, huh?
Yeah, my siblings, none of them are religious. My dad, I think, probably, you know, still has that enough relic of Catholic guilt not to be able to let go, but everyone else pretty much has.
And Stephanie is co-owner with you.
She's actually the only owner. Everyone calls me the co-owner, but it's entirely in her name.
Okay.
Now, we are talking with Sean Condon, who personally delivered flowers to the house of Jessica Alquist. After we were turned down by florists in Rhode Island, we have civil rights complaint, and we are going to talk a little bit more about this whole floral brouhaha in Rhode Island with him. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Stay tuned for more of Free Thought Radio.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
We're back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Sean Condon and Stephanie Ewart Condon operate Glimpse of Gaia, a floral business in Putnam, Connecticut. When no one else would deliver FFRF's flower order to Jessica Alquist, the 16-year-old Rhode Island State Church plaintiff, Glimpse of Gaia gladly did. And Gaia, we will tell you, is the primordial earth goddess in Greek mythology. And this is the floral shop that wouldn't be intimidated. And Sean Condon said it's a matter of fairness and decency. We've been talking with him on the phone about this rather extraordinary story. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Sean.
Oh, thank you.
Now, you had some critics. You mostly have heard from people who support you. You said you had two critics and you emailed them a very eloquent statement. We have not gone through that whole statement yet, but you made some very good points about the state church issue that involves Jessica at her school auditorium.
That's correct. And I heard back from both of the gentlemen that I emailed, and I couldn't read them to you.
No.
They were fairly short, at least. So
yeah, that's why we don't answer our crank mail. They just get worse. But why didn't you tell our listeners what you told them?
Well, I made a sort of a complicated argument about changing the nature of this from being the removal of the banner to one where Jessica had asked for a banner that represents her views to be put up. So then you would have a secular banner and this overtly Catholic banner. And then, of course, if there's anyone in the community who's a Muslim, perhaps they would want a banner of their own. And, you know, you can see where this is headed. Then you've got a Hindu banner and perhaps an evangelical banner to differentiate them from the Catholic banner. And suddenly our schools and our public space are littered with these different competing dogma.
Well, the walls aren't big enough. There's not enough room for it all.
No, not it certainly isn't. And I don't think anyone really wants that. Even people who are in favor of the banner would not want additional banners put up that don't represent their views. So if we don't want to have this war of competing dogma all over the halls of our schools and whatnot, we have to make a separation. So we have our private space for that. You have your Facebook, your Twitter account, your car, your home, and you can litter that as much as you want to with whatever your beliefs are. But in our public space, we keep that aside.
Well, and that argument could be made in so many violations. The lawsuit that we filed this past week about a Catholic shrine up on federal land in Montana. You know, imagine if it was, atheistic words, or, you know, we can't litter our whole public grounds with a religious war, can
And what
we?
If there were 42 statues of littering that hillside? Yeah,
How would you ski down it?
Yes.
Now, you also speculated about what is driving people's anger, and you were kind of chiding our public schools there.
Yes, I think that one thing that I didn't mention there is critical thinking, which isn't really taught in our schools, and I often say that people, you know, just accept on its face whatever is told to them, whatever they get in an email, as though it were true, and as a result of that, we have people believing preposterous things. And we still have people shouting about Obama going back to Kenya. It's so ludicrous of an idea. But as soon as you say it to someone, they don't have the automatic nonsense detector engaged. And as far as our public schools go, I was talking about the lack of a civics education in our public schools. I have a degree in history. And that separation of church and state was something that I was taught about as a young person, but not as well as, say, my dad was, and now they don't even have a decent history curriculum, or the social studies is a little vague. I think people should be taught about the way that we came to this Constitution and the amendments and why we have them.
And people are taking public office at every level without even having thought about these issues.
That's true.
High school principals and mayors and...
And the mayor of Cranston has gone after Jessica, her state representative. I mean, it really, her classmates, it really is the whole state arrayed against one child. Now, I was going to say, what was your major? Because you seem so well-read. So you were a history major.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you ever read about Roger Williams?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And including when I was a kid. I mean, you know, I'm from New England, so... You know, the start of our country pretty much all takes place right where we are. And so, you know, King Philip's War there's a big banner for that, and it's 6 miles from my house.
In Connecticut? Well,
No, it's in Massachusetts, actually.
Oh, in Massachusetts?
Yeah.
And he was the Indian chief.
And can you just tell listeners who might not know who Roger Williams is briefly? You know, he was basically the founder of Rhode Island.
Yes. What happened is he had a religious settlement in Massachusetts and was basically chased off by the Puritans. And so when he got to Rhode Island, he felt that there should be a haven for people, whatever their different religious beliefs are, and the foundation of the state is essentially freedom from religion.
Yes, and I mean, he wanted a haven for freedom of conscience. Wouldn't he be appalled at the treatment of Jessica?
I would imagine so, yeah.
And it's ironic because the Puritans were fiercely anti-Catholic, and Rhode Island welcomed Catholics, and now look what Catholics are doing to non-Catholics.
So can you give us, thank you so much for joining us today, Sean Condon.
Oh, you're welcome.
What's your website?
It is glimpseofgaia.com.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a nice day.
Thank you, Dave, for producing the show. And we thank our announcer, Buzz Kemper. We're listening to a little bit of Tchaikovsky, Waltz of the Flowers. Tchaikovsky, toward the end of his life, became increasingly more agnostic and critical of religion. This show is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. Go to ffrf.org/radio to sign up for the podcast.
The January-February issue of Free Thought Today, our newspaper, has lots of stuff about Jessica. It's got a whole column about the florist we just interviewed. Ask for a sample copy at 1-800-335-4021 or join us and we will send you 10 issues a year, tax deductible. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.